And good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I would like to welcome you to the June 2022 HITAC meeting. We always appreciate when you join us. As a reminder, your feedback is welcome. It could be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:45 Eastern Time this morning. So let's get started with our meeting. And first, I'd like to welcome ONC's executive leadership team to the meeting. And with us today is our national coordinator, Nikki Trevathy, Elise Sweeney Anthony, the executive director of the Office of Policy, and Avinash Shambhag, the executive director of the Office of Technology. I'll now call the meeting to order and begin roll call of the HITAC members, along with the federal agency representatives of the HITAC. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Madel Briggs-Melanson.
Good morning.
Hans Lutendeck.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Stephen Eichner.
Good morning.
Cynthia Fisher. Lisa Fry.
Good morning.
Raj Gabarty.
Good morning.
Valerie Gray.
Morning.
Adi Gunlapalli. Stephen Hester.
Morning.
Ram Iyer. Jim Durgis. Meredith Josephs. John Kansky.
Good morning.
And Kawamoto.
Morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Jonathan Nebaker. Aaron Neinstein.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
James Pantelis.
I'll see you.
Raj Ratwani. Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Hey, Jim.
Debbie Sears.
I'm here, sorry.
Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Bill Sutherland.
Good morning.
Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Good morning to everyone, and thank you so much. And now please join me in welcoming Nikki Trevathy for his opening remarks. Nikki?
Thanks. Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for joining this month's HITAC meeting. I'll be brief this morning, just give a few updates and really tee up, for Aaron and Denise, the meeting that we have today where, we've got a lot of really good stuff and want to get to that as quickly as possible. Wanted to first thank everyone for joining the latest Social Determinants of Health Information Exchange Learning Forum webinar this past Tuesday. We had a great turnout with a lot of stakeholders on hand to share lessons learned, promising new practices and challenges associated with exchanging SDOH data. Obviously a really, really important area, a high priority for us at ONC and with our federal partners. So we, really are, just very pleased with the engagement that we're getting there and the participation and what we're able to glean from that so that we can move forward in this important area. The next webinar is scheduled for July 19th. Where the session is going to cover privacy and security considerations, as well as financing models to support organizations pursuing SDOH information exchange. You can register by searching for SDOH Learning Forum on the ONC website, helpit.gov. So we welcome your participation there and thank you in advance for your help and engagement. I also want to thank and acknowledge the co-chairs, Stephen Lane and Arian Malik, and all the members of the Interoperability Standards Workgroup for their efforts to develop the recommendations that we're going to be looking at today. The portion of their recommendations, this portion is the second phase of a two-part charge. In April, the workgroup, as you may recall, presented their recommendations on the draft US CDI version 3. And we really appreciate the immense dedication of the workgroup members who've served over the past 5 months. today we're so just one comment on that. I mean that this work with the US CDI version 3 as well as the ISA, these are important, really and increasingly important kinds of activities that that we conduct and that we get tremendous feedback and engagement and advice from the HITACH, both with respect to the importance that these things are having in the market, as we've seen with respect to sort of adoption and our collective need to move forward as aggressively as possible with standards-based exchange and the use of open industry standards where available, as well as I will say with our federal partners as well, both with the US CDI as well as the ISA as being somewhat of a place for people to look, sort of a North Star with respect to things that have reached a maturity level that they are sort of usable, and with things that that are somewhat aspirational in some ways, but that can help to point directions for things where things may not be fully instantiated in regulation or as fully mature as some of the other use cases. So both of these things are incredibly important, and I think it's hard to overemphasize the importance of the work that this working group is doing to help us all move forward. Today, we're also going to talk about forming a new task force to review the existing ONC adopted standards and implementation specifications found on the ONC Standards Hub. So, we push forward with the new stuff, but we also need to look back and talk about pruning as well. And are there things that we want to be able to, sort of think about pruning? And that's what that new task force is going to be looking at. And Seth Brzezinski is going to provide an overview of this work in the HITACH charge. Want to point you to two new ONC blog posts. We've been doing our best to get as much sort of communication as possible through all of our various channels, and our blog is something that we've been spending a lot of time trying to activate, and hopefully all of you have been seeing that and hopefully appreciating it. If you're not, let us know, and if you are, let us know as well. But the first blog post that I wanted to highlight is really sharing the work of all of you, which is focused on the electronic prior auth work. I want to thank all the members of the e-prior auth task force for a tremendous amount of work that went into that in developing those recommendations. And I think, as all of you know, this is a very, very active area of interest for the entire industry. And so that work was, really, really beneficial and something of great interest, all across the board. And that blog, just tries to communicate that and showcase that work. The second blog is to highlight a new legislative proposal associated with information blocking that was put forward by the department, specifically the request that Congress provide HHS with the authority to issue binding advisory opinions for the information blocking regulations as part of our implementation of the 21st Century Cures Act. As I think most of you probably know, on the HITACH, the information blocking is very much a case-by-case determination. And often the questions that we get are somewhat general in nature, or they may be specific, but we aren't really in a position to be able to provide sometimes the kind of feedback that a requester may have in mind or may desire to help them move forward, because it is so case specific. The details actually matter a lot. And right now, ONC does not have the authority to issue advisory opinions where we would be able to look at the individual circumstances of a case and then be able to offer a little bit more focused and targeted advice regarding sort of the different compliance aspects of it. So we think that is something that would be very beneficial to the industry based on the feedback that we've been getting and the types of questions that we've been getting. And that's why we were happy that the department was included that in our budget request. Happy to talk more about that if people are interested in that in a future meeting. But just wanted to flag that for you so that if you're in discussions with our congressional partners or with others, to be able to provide a little bit of background on why we think that would be important for the successful ongoing implementation of the 21st Century Cures Act information blocking provisions. Both of those blog posts, I think, as you all know, are on healthit.gov. For a member update, the GAO has begun their HITACH appointment cycle for this year, and they just released a Federal Register notice requesting nominations to serve on the HITACH. The GAO expects to appoint at least 4 new HITACH members whose term will begin this coming January 2023. And the deadline to submit letters of nomination and resumes is July 22nd, So just a little more than a month from today. So for all of your awareness, if you want to communicate that to your various communities. Again, the deadline for those nominations and resumes is July 22nd, 2022 to the GAO. So let me just close here and get off the stage and move on to more important things. I do wanna thank everyone for joining us today. And as always, and very sincerely, thank the HITECH members for all of your support and engagement. You've dedicated a ton of time participating in the HITECH, especially those who've dedicated several months lending your expertise on one or in some cases a few of the subcommittees where a ton of work happens. The HITECH is traditionally does have a break in the summer. And with that in mind, the July 14th full HITECH meeting is going to be canceled and we'll resume in August. But just to make sure that that no good deed goes unpunished, the new adopted standards task force will be meeting during that time, and we'll provide an update on their progress during the August HITECH meeting. So for any who are thinking about participating in that work group, just want to keep that in mind. So let me now turn it over to Aaron and Denise for their opening remarks.
Wonderful, thank you, Mickey. Appreciate it. And welcome everybody to this month's HITECH. So Mickey, to answer your question. Regarding ONC's blog posts and everything else, fantastic. And also want to thank you and your team for being so accessible to the community, especially for all the hospitals that have questions and whatever. You guys have never made any shortage of availability. So thank you for that. Your team is excellent trying to explain things. Denise?
Yes. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our June meeting. I'm excited to hear, Mickey, that the advisory authority got put into the budget. I think that's going to be absolutely critical based on some of the work both Aaron and I have done with a number of the other CIOs at the various health systems and clinics. And then also, I'm one of those individuals who's going to term out at the end of this year. I was appointed by the GAO Comptroller's Office. And so what that means is I will not get to finish my term as co-chair. So you all might be thinking about, your interest in that. I know ONC has a process for identifying a new co-chair. So you all have 6 months to think about that or a little less.
Denise, we will miss you.
No, it's been quite a journey. So I'm going to relish the last 5 months that I have with the committee, but hopefully we'll still get to stay involved. So let me go over our agenda this morning. We have two main topics, and Mickey gave a little preview. We are going to hear from Seth at the ONC on the adopted standards review and the new task force and what that's going to be all about. And then we are going to hear from our co-chairs of the interoperability standards work group, Stephen Lane and Arian Malik, and they're going to present their work group's recommendations on the 2022 ISA or the Interoperability Standards Advisory. And so we will be taking a vote today on those recommendations. So before we begin, and I hand it over to Seth, we do need to approve our minutes from May. So if I could get a motion for approval of our minutes. For May?
A motion.
Thank you. And who is the second?
This Hans.
Thank you, Hans. All right, all those in favor, say aye.
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 All right. Aye. Anybody who does not approve, no? Any abstentions? All right, so our May minutes are approved. And with that, I'd like to hand over the podium to Seth Pazinski so he can give us the preview of our new task force.
All right, thank you, Denise. Hi, Seth Pazinski. I'm the Director of Strategic Planning and Coordination at ONC. Thanks for giving me the chance to overview some new work for the HITECH. And it's not every day that we get to start and be a part of something for the first time ever, but today is one of those days. So hopefully I got you a little bit intrigued about this new task force, and I will just give a little bit of overview and background. We can go to the next slide. So we've had to wait for about 5 years to take action on this Cures Act provision. But the wait is over, so it's now time for us to take action to respond to this congressional requirement, as Mickey mentioned, to bring stakeholders together to review the existing set of ONC adopted standards and make recommendations on whether to maintain those standards or phase them out. And the national coordinator is charging the HITAC to serve as that stakeholder convening body. We can go to the next slide. So just recognizing, at least in name, some of the focus being on standards here, I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between the interoperability standards work group and the recommendations you'll hear about from that work group later today, to distinguish that from the charge of this new task force. So the interoperability standards work group, our existing work group, is an annual requirement that responds to a separate Cures Act provision, and that work group is focused on recommending priority uses of health IT and related standards. Their work focuses really on informing the ONC Interoperability Standards Advisory, which is how we coordinate on interoperability standards that can be used to address a variety of interoperability needs that covers the kind of broad spectrum of clinical, public health, research, et cetera. So this new task force is more of a, you know, a look at the existing portfolio as opposed to sort of informing what is to come in the future. So this is just focused on, it's a little more targeted on only the standards and implementation specifications that have been adopted through ONC by regulation. So this is kind of a process where the industry gets to provide a check and give us recommendations to inform how ONC is, uses its kind of strongest lever, one of its strongest levers, being its regulatory authority behind behind adopting standards. And per the Cures requirement, this is something that we'll be repeating with the HITAC every 3 years. And so the HITAC recommendations that we'll get from the task force will be an input to inform future ONC rulemaking. We can go to the next slide. So just read through the specific charge to the HITAC is to create a task force to review the existing set of ONC adopted standards and implementation specifications, and then again, make recommendations to maintain or phase out those standards and implementation specifications, and the scope of those standards and where the set of adopted standards are maintained is on the ONC standards hub, and we'll plug that link into the chat as well. And then again, as Mickey highlighted, this charge is not focused on seeking new standards for ONC to adopt, but just reviewing the existing set. We're asking the committee to complete their work by the September 14th HITAC meeting. We can go to the next slide. This is the current roster. I want to thank the members as well as the external subject matter experts who volunteered to participate so far. And a special thanks to Hans and Stephen Eichner, who volunteered to co-chair this new task force. If you haven't volunteered yet, but just can't resist being a part of this first ever group to do this work, please reach out to Mike Berry to be added to the task force. And then we can go to the last slide. From a timeline perspective, just a quick overview here. We're still working on scheduling the first meeting of the task force. We anticipate that to be in the next 2 weeks or so. We should be able to determine that by the end of this week. So encourage folks to check back on the HITAC calendar early next week. We should at that point have the meeting scheduled and have the cadence down for the frequency of the task force meetings going forward. And then as a reminder, we canceled the July HITAC meeting. So the first update from this new task force will be at the August 17th HITAC meeting, and then final recommendations and a vote for the HITAC at the September 14th meeting. So again, I want to thank everybody who has already signed up to participate and volunteered to be on the task force. And if you are interested and haven't reached out yet, please contact Mike Berry. I think now I'll turn it back to Denise to moderate if we have any questions.
All right. Thank you, Seth. And we do have a question from Dr. Lane. Stephen, if you would go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Seth, for that. I just wanted to say how excited I am to see the folks who've stepped forward to participate in this task force. I think you've got some really strong folks on that team. And I specifically wanted to call out Hans and Stephen Eichner, who've both been very involved in the work of our interoperability standards work group, and I think are well aware of the issues that we've unearthed there and will be discussing in our recommendations. So this is a great group, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with.
That'll provide some nice continuity. All right, anybody else? Does anybody else have a question or comment? Aaron, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, question, Seth. So just curious, I think this is phenomenal. I think this is great. And the roster is very strong. Really appreciate everybody volunteering. Is there a mechanism yet for industry groups to be able to weigh in on proposed standards or items they would like to see addressed by the work group? Does that mechanism exist? I know usually ONC is very open and receptive to it. Don't know if there's, should everybody email you? Should they email, you know, contact someone specific? I know there's a lot of folks in the industry have been working through this. It'd be great to get the summation of all their information as well.
Yeah, no, great point. Thanks for the question. And just as a reminder, for each task force meeting, there is, just like we have in all the high tech meetings, the opportunity for public comment. And that opportunity is for both verbal and written comments. So encourage anyone who's interested to give feedback that they can do it through that public comment process during the task force meetings. And we'll have a better sense once we connect with the task force co-chairs to hopefully have a kind of structured agenda of how we'll be taking a look at the different sets of standards. So that will give folks a little bit more of a cadence on how to plug in depending on which particular standards folks are interested in.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, thank you, Seth. I am going to turn it over to Aaron to present our next topic.
All right, that was a good one. Always appreciate the opportunity to stay precise on things. Okay, so the next one up is we have the Interoperability Standards Workgroup Recommendations on the ONC's 2022 and Interoperability Standards Advisory. This will go to a vote at the end of it, but first we'll be led by our experienced co-chairs and always amazing colleagues here, Dr. Lane and Arian Malik, to lead us through it. So the floor is yours.
Well, thank you so much. We're very excited to be back again with the second round of our recommendations from this work group that has been just incredibly engaged in the work and bringing forward these recommendations to all of you for your consideration. Arian?
Now, we as I think Mickey noted up front, we looked at our charge. We sort of gasped with horror because it seemed impossible. And thanks to a fantastic work group, we have not just recommendations, but I think fairly meaty and well thought through recommendations for the advisory committee's consideration.
So let's go ahead and jump in with the next slide. We're going to go through the usual reviewing who's been involved, and we're going to do a bit of a deeper dive on the background of the ISA to bring everybody up to speed. There are a number of people on the high tech that haven't been through this before. We'll go through our methods and approach and present a whole host of recommendations. So on the next slide and the one after, you will see the members of the group, many of whom you saw recently on another slide showing for the next task force that's coming up. So nice overlap there, but we really had a broad representation on this group and people really dug in and worked hard to bring you these recommendations. On the next slide, we'll jump in a little bit. One more slide on the background. So remember, like so much of the work that we're doing, we are being directed by the specifics that came to us in the 21st Century Cures Act. And the focus here was for the work group to focus on the high TAC priority use cases, or uses, I should say, of health IT that were specified in the Cures Act, including support of public health, the importance of interoperability, supporting privacy and security of health information, and of course, patient access. So this was really the starting point for our work group. On the next slide and the one after that, you will be reminded of the specific charges that we received when our work group kicked off. We were to review and provide recommendations initially on the draft US CDI version 3, and then on to other interoperability standards, which is within the ISA, the Interoperability Standards Advisory itself. So we are today here talking about our charge 2 to identify opportunities to update the ISA to address the high-tech priority uses of health IT, including the related standards and implementation specifications. So you'll recall we had the high-tech priority uses that we reviewed, and that was where we started our focus. So I'm going to step back now and provide a bit of an overview of the ISA and the role that it plays in the health IT ecosystem. So let's go on from here. So the ISA is, as was referenced earlier, meant to be a single public listing of the standards and implementation specifications that vendors and others can use to address specific interoperability needs. And this really is meant to be a dynamic resource with ongoing dialogue, debate, and consensus amongst the various industry stakeholders to advance this listing, to keep track of what is coming down the line in terms of standards that are evolving, to track those over time, but also being clear about the limitations and dependencies that exist that need to be addressed as we implement and utilize these standards to support interoperability. So the ISA doesn't require anything of anyone. It's really a catalog, but it has a lot of rich information in it. And I invite everybody to go check out the ISA on the web in order to fully interact with the ISA and provide input and comments. You need to create an individual logon. And when you do, then you can post to that resource. So let's go on to the next slide and talk a bit more about how the ISA is used. There are many stakeholders who are busy administering both governmental and non-governmental procurements, doing testing, certification, et cetera, all of whom need to look to the ISA to see, you know, what is out there and how they can use it. Health IT developers certainly look to the ISA to understand what standards they should be adopting and building towards. Implementers of those health IT tools also look to ensure that the products that they've purchased are compliant with the standards that are out there and that are being supported. And then there's a lot of informative content, as I mentioned, regarding the various conditions and dependencies involved in the use of these standards. And there are many of those. On the next page, we talk a little bit about the process for updating the ISA. The ISA itself is updated throughout the year as new input comes in from stakeholders and awareness is raised within the ONC. And then there is an annual call for review and comment that happens in the summer. There are a number of folks on the ONC team who are responsible for the care and feeding of the ISA and keeping that up and responding to the various comments that are received. And then once a year, there's a static annual version that is published and posted, and each of the annual versions is available on the web that you can see. And that provides a static reference that can be put into regulation or other documentation. So there's also an RSS feed, which is nice, that you can sign up for if you want to know as changes are made in the ISA, you can be informed of those. And then there's a page that lists the recent changes. So that's all very, very convenient and very user friendly. On the next slide, we'll talk about the structure of the ISA. It's really, it has evolved over time. And one of the things that our work group did this year was made some comments about how the structure might be improved to make this even more user-friendly. But there is a section on vocabulary and code sets and terminology, the standards that we look towards to support interoperability, content and structure, services and exchange standards, and then a number of administrative standards inside each section. There are subsections that address various topics related. Then there are these informational appendices that are included as well that really dig deep and provide linkages to resources that support the use of these standards. There is a section that you can get to called Specialty Care and Settings, which was initially put up to support pediatric use cases and has subsequently had the addition of opioid-related issues and social determinants of health and COVID-19. And as you'll be hearing, we have some specific recommendations on how that can be made more robust and helpful. On the next slide, there are characteristics and other helpful information for each of the standards and implementation specs that are listed. And I'm not going to read through this list, but you can see we really look at each of those standards from various dimensions to really understand them insofar as possible. And of course, not every standard has all of these characteristics listed, but as available, these are included. On the next page, I will point out that the USCDI is actually a subcomponent of the ISA. So the USCDI, which we've talked about in our prior recommendations, really is a piece of the ISA, and that includes, of course, the published USCDI standards, the expansion process that you're all now quite familiar with, as well as the on-deck submission system that's there, the standards version advancement process, which I trust we'll be hearing more about at a future meeting, is also a component of the ISA. And then there, as I suggested, a number of ways for public comment to be introduced. There are public comments related to the ISA itself, to the USCDI, and to the SVAP. So there's a lot of opportunities for public to interact with, to review, and provide input. And I'll just remind everyone that the ONC team is incredibly responsive to public input on these resources. They read all the comments, they take them seriously, and we do see that they lead to changes. So very, very dynamic area within the ONC's profile and portfolio. On the next page, we talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we recognize in looking at the ISA, trying to really optimize how the ISA is user-friendly and easily understandable as the platform grows organically. You know, now and then there is a need to sort of shake out the dust and reformat things so that it becomes as user-friendly as possible. There are clearly varying stakeholder perspectives and needs, you know, as patient advocates and individuals get more involved in this work, you know, we need to be sure that the resources that we make available are really appropriate and accessible for all stakeholders. And we really just want to make sure that the ISA remains a valuable resource across the board. On the next page, you get a little sample of what the ISA looks like. This is specifically looking at the standards related to allowing a prescriber to send a prescription to a pharmacy. And you can see that there are various standards listed that are final and mature, either in a pilot mode or fully in production. There is a column listing whether these standards are required by a federal regulation. A little bit about cost and the availability of test tools. And then, of course, there's the emerging standard, in this case, the HL7 FHIR medication request, which is in development. And you can see, again, what are the various standards? What are their states of maturity? And then at the bottom, this detailed description of the limitations, dependencies, preconditions, and various, in this case, security patterns that need to be considered as we're sending medications back and forth. So a lot of rich information here. On the next slide, there are some additional resources in the ISA, just explaining it and how it works so that stakeholders, when they come to it, can get a little orientation, talking about the process and the timeline as I just reviewed. And then there's a set of FAQs as well. So that that was meant to be an overview of the ISA for those of you who haven't been participating in this over time. I think, Aaron and Denise, we're going to go ahead and go all the way through and hold questions to the end.
That's
all
correct. Right. Yes, thumbs please. Up. Yeah, go for it.
Perfect. All right. So in that case, we're going to transition to Aaron to talk about the approach that we took to this work and give you a little bit of an executive summary.
All right. So fantastic. We had a pretty heavy charge, and then we actually took on some additional work outside the charge. So I'll give you an orientation to the types of recommendations that we're doing as Stephen tagged me into the octagon. And then I'll tag him back in for the next section, and then I'll clean up at the end. We put together recommendations broadly in three major categories. One is on the sort of the meta recommendations on the process and structure of the ISA itself, ways of making the ISA itself more usable and user-friendly for consumers. And then the ISA, our charge proper, which was to make recommendations relating to the updates to the ISA. And so we made use case recommendations, additional standard recommendations for broadly these six very broad categories. And you'll see that we have a whole set of detailed recommendations in each of those areas. And then we took the opportunity to revise a similar incarnation of this work group that met in 2018 and made specific recommendations for orders and results. And really the tie to the ISA charge was that we noted at that time that there were applicable standards in these areas, but poorer adoption of the standards than we thought was warranted. And so we in 2018, took pains to outline potential policy levers and tools and outline, you know, an approach to expanding adoption of standards-based exchange. Here, we revised those recommendations, really focusing on ONC's coordinating role. But really, the way to think about this is to say, hey, we've got things that are listed in the ISA that are fit for purpose, but we have more bespoke interoperability on the ground, and that actually impedes things like public health, as well as patient health and safety, and more on that later. Broadly, I'm going to take on first section. Stephen will take on the second section, and I will play cleanup at the end. So if we go on to the next slide. Structure and process, let us keep going. So a whole bunch. So as Stephen already mentioned, there's a section in the ISA called specialty care and settings. As we were looking through material in the ISA, you know, there's been a broad view that you can divide standards into vocabulary, content, and transport or exchange standards. Very useful categorization. At the same time, if you want to go solve a particular interoperability problem on behalf of patients, on behalf of public health, et cetera, you have to go to mix and match across each of those areas. And we thought the specialty care and settings cross-cutting view is really useful. You know, we recommend that it be made a little more broad and that we have more of those cross-cutting views. We recommend that it might be possible for ONC to create a prioritization or tagging schema so you can highlight standards associated with use cases, expand those use cases. We also struggled a couple of places where the look and feel of the ISA itself changed depending on what path you took into the ISA. So for example, it was hard sometimes to find the specialty care and settings view depending on how you vectored in through the website. We recommend that ONC take a usability pass. If we go into the next slide, some of the priority use cases that we believe should be tracked in the ISA are the same priority use cases already identified and voted on by the HITECH. I won't list them all. If we go on to the next slide, we also recommend that we further expand those use cases in the following areas, public health, equity by design, request for correction, which we'll see a little bit later. price transparency and the fire accelerator use cases. And you'll see recommendations there as well in a bit. So if we go on to the next section. All right, a lot here. We make a set of recommendations to marry the US CDI and the ISA better. So as a little bit of preamble for this, in the past, there was one US CDI and you know, it by definition, things in the ISA referenced the things in the US CDI. As we expand, US CDI will be versioned, version 2, version 3, et cetera, and then you know, US CDI plus. And so we have a need to better track which standards in the ISA track to which versions of US CDI. So we want the US CDI update process and the ISA update process to be more closely harmonized. As we add things to the US CDI, we'd like to add them to the ISA as well. The limitations, dependencies, preconditions, and challenges, we want to drive better alignment between the US CDI and the ISA. As mentioned, as the US CDI changes versions, we believe that the ISA needs to have tags or markers that associate different versions of standards with the appropriate version of the US CDI. We'd like to see closer harmonization of data classes and elements in US CDI to the ISA, and a workflow to cross-coordinate US CDI submissions back into the ISA. So, you know, again, just to orient people to this, as we update, as we made recommendations in the US CDI to track, for example, social determinants of health data, we're making recommendations that that there be a common core data set. We also need to think about where that common core data set gets exchanged and used. And you'll see some examples of that later on in our recommendations. So if we go on to the next set of recommendations, same thing for federally required. In the past, there was one major federal program, meaningful use or promoting interoperability associated with stuff in the ISA and stuff in US CDI. As we've matured, we have a wider variety of programmatics, and there's a need to be a little more specific about federally required. So we might have, for example, multiple CMS programs that reference versions of standards in the ISA. CDC may pick up and reference elements in the ISA. VA and DOD relative to procurement for referral services may reference specific elements in the ISA. We also, you know, there's a really nice set of sort of dot plots or indications in the ISA about maturity and adoption. There's a good explainer. We'd like to see, you know, a little more evidence behind the determination of maturity and adoption, so that stakeholders can assess what the evidence is for maturity and adoption and how we can progress maturity and adoption. If we go on to the next. All right, we saw a number of places where the ISA had gotten out of drift with, for example, HL7 accelerators. One of the most exciting things that's happened in interoperability, and interoperability itself is incredibly exciting, so that's saying something, is the notion of the accelerator function that I think started with the Argonaut project, led by a little known Argonaut project coordinator who I don't know what he's doing these days, and this accelerator notion really has expanded to take on additional challenges. And as we do that, one of the great things that happens is we go through a lot of prototyping and piloting of standards. It would be useful as we establish those that we have a place in the ISA to catch all of that work. So we saw a bunch of places where the ISA wasn't even tracking something that was being promoted through an HL7 accelerator. So number one, let's add an indicator whether something in the ISA is being tracked by an accelerator. Number two, establish a streamlined process with SDOs and similar bodies to track updates, coordinate with accelerators and similar projects to make sure that we get a streamlined process to get the ISA updated. And you know, a first backhaul backtrack to make sure that the ISA tracks all of the use cases related to, and you can see, you know, the rather impressive list of HL7 fire accelerators, the Patchio project, and so that we get the ISA sort of up to date with the current state of the accelerators. And next. All right, and now I will tag Stephen Lane back into the octagon.
Thank you, Arian, for going through that. I really want to just kind of pause and give you all a chance to take a breath. There's a lot of material here that we're bringing to you today. A lot of thought went into the very detailed wording of these recommendations. I want to remind you that this slide deck is accompanied by a multi-page report that has also been distributed to you that goes into greater detail on a number of these recommendations. So really appreciate all of you, you know, hanging in here as we go through these. So the next round here is going to be the specific recommendations regarding the content within the ISA. This is sort of the meat of our charge, and we'll just go through these one by one. And again, please collect any questions that you have at the end. Also note that in the public chat, I did put in the link to the ISA if you wanted to, while we're talking today, you know, pull that up on your other screen and just to get a sense of where we're pointing you, that might be helpful. So the first of our recommendations regarding the ISA content has to do with, again, one of the use cases. And again, we really did put a lot of thought into thinking of this in terms of use cases and what standards support those use cases, the need to track various use cases, as Arian mentioned earlier. So the first one here has to do with the use case of referrals between providers and community-based social care providers, so clinical providers and social care providers, and recommending simply that the ONC update the use case label on this. It is already in there, but it's called referral to extra clinical services, and we wanted to make that a little bit clearer by saying referrals between clinicians and community-based organizations and other extra clinical services. Because of course, as we're collecting and sharing SDOH data, one of the key things we want to do with that is actually act on that data and integrate social and clinical care. And we felt that this would be helpful. Next slide. Next recommendation has to do again with a use case, in this case, achieving health equity by design, and specifically the SDOH standards. So recommending that the ONC include and track in the existing use case of achieving health equity by design, the relevant standards related to documenting social determinants of health. So sort of saying, where do the SDOH standards go within the ISA? On the next slide, we go into a little bit more depth here. You know, you heard in our first round of recommendations about the USCDI. You think you're all aware of the Gravity Project, one of the current accelerators that is working hard on developing and advancing the data and implementation standards for SDOH data. And we are specifically recommending that the ONC update the ISA to integrate these data elements, domains, assessment tools, value sets, and implementation guides that were included in USCDI version 2, as well as the reference implementation, which is continuing to evolve, and track those also within the ISA. So again, this notion that the ISA is this catalog of existing and evolving standards, and we want to make sure that the work of Gravity and the focus on SDOH data is clearly, you know, homed and being tracked within the ISA itself. Next slide. Now we're going to shift a little bit. Again, related to the SDOH standards is the issue of the race and ethnicity vocabulary subsets. This again is in the ISA. You will recall from our earlier recommendations on USCDI, the importance of looking at and tracking the source and method of collecting various data elements within demographics, specifically race and ethnicity. We want to make sure that that data related to source and method of collecting, when that is available, is also a part of the data that we're tracking related to SDOH. And here again, just the notion that this should be highlighted in the ISA as well. Next slide. All right. Shifting here to a new use case, one that we have not really discussed much within the HITACH, but one which really had a lot of support and interest in our work group. So we're bringing it to you. This is the HIPAA right for individuals to request corrections to their medical records. We're all well aware that this is an important right that we have under HIPAA and an important challenge that we have with health data, where errors or omissions may creep into the health data. As that data is moved around the ecosystem, those errors can be promulgated to multiple stakeholders. HIPAA for many, many years has provided individuals the right to request corrections. And a lot of work has been done by various groups to move towards a standard technology for the submission of those requests. This slide provides a number of the background resources that relate to this right and to the evolving technology to support it. So this is provided by way of background. On the next slide is the recommendation itself for the ISA, recommending that the ONC include and track within the ISA the patient request for corrections as a use case, and as with all the other use cases that we're discussing, so we can watch the standards develop and the implementation guides as well. Related to this, ISA-specific recommendations are other recommendations related to how the ONC can support this use case more generally. The first one recommending that ONC clarify in its communications that the HIPAA right to request corrections broadly applies to all PHI in the designated record set. And again, this is not ONC's main focus, but just making it clear as we create communications around this, recommending that ONC also consider health IT certification criteria that would look at this process, this use case of patients requesting rights to corrections. And then recommending that ONC collaborate with the group that's really digging deep on this, the HL7 Patient Empowerment Work Group. And then there are other stakeholders, of course, to help to address the existing and identified gaps in the standards, capabilities, and implementation specifications. So this was an area, as I said, of great interest. So there's this ISA-specific recommendation to track this as a use case, and then supporting recommendations regarding how the ONC can support this more generally. Let's go on. All right. Another one, again, consumer-focused, enabling consumers to download image files from their health records. Of course, some of these images are in the EHR. Some of them are in imaging-specific systems. But there are evolving standards in this area that we feel should be tracked within the ISA so as to clarify for various vendors, you know, be they patient-facing apps or EHRs, et cetera, how individuals can download these images, whether they are reference quality, full diagnostic quality, et cetera, from the systems that contain those. Next slide. Okay, our next recommendation again has to do with consumers and enabling them to download their data, but in this case, their personal genomic variant data. Of course, this is a data class that is out there that is increasing in volume and the numbers of people who have these tests done. And there are, again, evolving and emerging standards to enable consumers to download this data and then to utilize it, sharing it with apps, sharing it with providers, et cetera. And we feel that this should be tracked as a use case within the ISA as well. Next slide. All right, care plans and chronic disease management, another important use case. There is some reference to this within the ISA that we felt could be clarified. So recommending that we include and track in the ISA this use case and emerging standards to support dynamic longitudinal shared care plans. This is certainly something that, most of us don't have the benefit of today. This would also support care planning and coordination, and then referencing the relevant terminology, exchange standards, et cetera, that support this. Here again, we have the ISA specific recommendation as well as a supporting recommendation to the ONC that they continue to work with stakeholders, and some of those are listed here, to identify and close the gaps in existing standards around care coordination and care plan management. Next slide. Here we also dug pretty deep in the area of electronic case reporting or ECR standards. We had a presentation from some teams that have been working to evolve these standards. This was an area where we found that the standards that were listed in the ISA were falling behind the standards that are in use within the industry and that are being advanced to support electronic case reporting. So there's some very detailed recommendations here regarding the release versions that either have been published and are in operations or will be published next month. And again, we just wanted to assure that the ISA was tracking the latest standards as they come online. We also wanted to assure that the ISA tracked three very specific transactions that are utilized to support ECR, and they are listed here. And again, very detailed recommendations, in part related to the close engagement that we had with folks from public health in evolving these recommendations. So again, here again, we had the specific ISA recommendations as well as the supporting recommendation that the ONC continue to coordinate with the various federal, state, local, territorial partners to push forward and accelerate the maturity and adoption of standards for electronic case reporting, as this has really accelerated in its use and its utility over the course of the pandemic. Next slide. All right, now this shifts again to some new standards that are evolving actually outside of the healthcare industry related to data provenance, specifically the provenance of online content. We had input regarding this Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, or C2PA, which is an evolving standard that has been stood up through a foundation project with engagement of a number of the large tech companies. So this is a standard that we felt will apply or and can apply within the health IT community, and as such should be tracked within the ISA itself. Next slide. Clinical decision support. The issue here has to do with the rationale, the algorithms, the tools that are used to develop clinical decision support. Again, this came, you know, from the patient perspective, patients who, you know, benefit from or where clinical decision support is utilized in determining their care. Today, it's not easy, sometimes not possible for patients to know what decision support may have been used, what algorithms may have been used to impact their care. So the recommendation here is that ONC again track within the ISA this use case of documenting and communicating the decision rationale utilized in generating decision support alerts and recommendations. This is early on, but it is an important use case, important to patients and patient advocates, and one that we felt should be tracked and supported ongoing. Next slide. All right, so that actually came to the end of the specific recommendations that were within our charge two, as we reviewed earlier. As Arianne mentioned earlier, we also spent a good bit of time digging deep into recommendations related to laboratory orders and results. This is work that has been done by a whole series of task forces that preceded our work group that were chaired, you know, by Arian and myself and others. And a lot has been happening in this area of laboratory data interoperability. It continues to be an area of major challenge, but a lot of people have been doing great work in this area, and we felt it was important to bring forward updated recommendations based on earlier work that's been presented here to the HITAC that incorporates this additional work that's been done in this space. So Arian, you want to take us through these?
Absolutely. So, you know, again, for context, as Stephen just mentioned, we were asked to and did a deep dive into the SHIELD project, which is a collaboration between FDA and other HHS stakeholders and industry stakeholders to better encode its source. If you go back to our 2018 recommendations for an early incarnation, we made specific recommendations for lab and order content. And, you know, among those recommendations were the recommendations that ONC worked with FDA to make sure that approval of IVDs, in vitro devices, so lab analyte machines, are done in such a way as to harmonize terminology, so that in the ideal world, the lab device, the IVD itself, flows data to the laboratory information system or LIS, and then flows all the way back to the ordering provider. And for context, right now, when we looked at the ISA, we believe that the ISA appropriately tracks all of the related standards associated with lab interoperability. And we recognize that in the current day, standards-based exchange for orders and labs bidirectionally and multidirectionally, including to public health, is more bespoke than it is standards-based. If you think about the ordering and lab world, think about, you know, hamster wheels of informaticists who were hand managing codes and code sets at multiple stages along the life cycle, from IVD to LIS to an LIS to EHR, in the EHR itself being cross-mapped. The actual standards that are used, with the exception of public health that has adopted the ELR standard that's back to what's called the LRI standard, with the exception of that standard, most of the exchange is using HL7 V2, but not using the implementation guidance that's been carefully vetted and curated. And is really, really good. And the net of all of that is a lot of inefficiency across the U.S. healthcare system, underutilization of electronic orders with concomitant patient safety issues. In particular, I think we saw in our experience with COVID, that was a weak link in case tracking and case reporting. We didn't have a full end-to-end lifecycle view. And so based on the analysis that we did, this was an area where we believe that the ISA is tracking appropriately standards. And we also believe that we are falling short as a nation of adoption utilization of those standards. And this is an area where we went a little extracurricular, but ISA adjacent, to start thinking about a policy framework for ONC, to think about working with other federal stakeholders and industry participants to create more of an ecosystem view for orders and results. All right. So with that as preamble, we've separated our recommendations into information model, focusing on results and focusing on orders. So first recommendation is recommend that ONC coordinate with HHS partners and industry stakeholders to create an interoperable information model. So I think if you remember when we looked at the USCDI recommendations, we noted that USCDI had some bits that were, you know, mapped to the, for example, the CLIA standard for results transmission. But there's actually a lot more that's spelled out in ELR and the HL7 LOI and LRI guides, as well as HL7 FHIR. And so here we believe that aligning on a common information model would be useful. If we go on to the next section. So here we have a very carefully crafted statement that says ONC work with other federal partners, SDO, state and local public health, et cetera, to create and support a policy framework that encourages, incentivizes, requires, or otherwise enables closed loop, order to result, communication, and multilateral distribution of results, especially including to public health, using standards and comprehensive implementation guidance. So, you know, the net of this is it would be pretty good if we were using the standards and implementation guidance that's been carefully crafted. We're falling short of that, not because the standards and implementation guidance are bad, but because we aren't taking an ecosystem view. And, you know, we believe that ONC is the responsible party to put together a policy framework. And we also believe that there are multiple policy levers that are available across the federal government and with industry stakeholders to provide both carrots and sticks. So then we get down into some nitty gritty bits. Electronic orders are hampered because we don't yet have a common orderables catalog. We're getting a lot better. There's a lot of subset orderables. So, you know, what is the unit that I order? We believe that ONC can convene and create a consensus development process to prioritize and encourage or incent adoption of standardized coding for the most common and important orderables and panels of each order type. Looking at the most common ones that are used for clinical care, population health, and public health. If we go on to the next one. In the lab world, there's a bunch of stuff that is regulated by FDA related to IVD, the analyte machines themselves. And then there's a framework for labs to create their own self-developed test specifications. We believe it would be useful for ONC to create a policy framework for those self-developed test specifications to be harmonized to LOINC so that we can actually order them. Because if labs are creating, if we have a common set of orderables, but labs are creating new orderables and there's no way of getting those codes back to the EHRs, we're back to the sticky situation. A little gloss here, we have clinical orderables that are mapped to LOINC, and then there are procedural codes that are used for administrative purposes where labs get paid. It would be pretty darn cool if the clinical order could automatically generate the administrative transactions so that you don't have to have duplicative processes and duplicative mapping between the clinical orderables and the administrative payments. And so it'd be useful to create a policy framework to standardize, to make sure that the coding standardization includes cross maps to the administrative codes that enable labs to get paid. Next, oddly enough, in healthcare, people like to get paid. Next slide. Right, let's talk about resulting. We recommend that ONC work with, and then we've got this common phrase that really it really looks at the broad ecosystem for resulting organizations to support the results information model that we previously referred to and associated communication and content standards when exchanging via electronic messages, yada, 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 or the future transport mechanism. So what this means is, standards alone are not sufficient for interoperability. You've got to have a framework for adoption of standards and implementation guidance. There needs to be some reason why resulting organizations are using, for example, the LRI spec as opposed to custom implementation guidance. Set of recommendations relating to coding as early to source as possible. And again, the dream here is that the information flows off of the IBD in ways that either are pre-coded or automatically facilitate coding. And again, imagine in the lab, informaticists on hamster wheels, cross-coding everything, which has patient safety issues, as well as complexity and cost issues for the US healthcare system. If we had a policy framework where LOINC and SNOMED codes were encoded as early as possible, we would mitigate and eliminate a bunch of manual work and improve cost, as well as improve the safety of this critical part of our infrastructure. We recommend that ONC, in coordination with yada, 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 creates sustainable mechanisms that lead to IVD test devices and LISs to automate mapping and translation. The SHIELD work is creating a framework where the IVDs, the lab analyte machines, include cross maps to LOINC. That's being done in conjunction, sort of in pilot, with the SHIELD project. It would be useful if there were sustainable mechanisms to keep that work going, so that, for example, as a consequence of registration, IVD manufacturers could update codes. And there was some shared infrastructure for keeping those code maps to date and available for stakeholders nationwide. If we go on to the next slide. I know this is incredibly exciting, getting into the nitty-gritty detail of labs. And for those of you who aren't as close to lab interoperability, there might be too much excitement for you to bear, but keep in mind that we had some amazing experts on this work group who knew this area and could contain their excitement enough to kind of craft these very, very carefully crafted recommendations.
We're all bursting with excitement, Arian.
Exactly.
Going. Phenomenal. This is
good stuff. Okay. We're going to keep going. Same kind of process. Let's make sure that as there are new tests or needed variations or self-developed tests, that there's an existing, that there's a process for keeping those codes up to date. Recommend that ONC, in coordination with the FDA, SDOs, manufacturers, and industry stakeholders, including SHIELD, enhance the ability for test results to include identification of the device using a UDI. Pretty crazy that we could track in a result the actual analyte, the reagent test kit that was used to build that result in ways that would enhance patient safety throughout the life cycle of labs. Crazy talk. We recommend that ONC, in conjunction with yada, 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 create policy levers inclusive of a bunch of stuff to create incentives to map internally generated results and result codes to standard vocabularies. And again, same kind of thing. You got self-developed tests. You've got self-developed procedures. We talked first on the ordering side. Here we're talking on the resulting side to make sure that when there are self-developed tests, that they're resulted with standard terminology that's cross-mapped and publicly available, as opposed to proprietary terminology that's only held by that one lab. All right, next slide. ONC, in conjunction with support and encourage proper and consistent LOINC SNOMED encoding across result sources. So let's make sure that that we keep those codes consistent across labs, imaging centers, and other resulting organizations. And let's make sure that the reagents, test kits, IVDs, device UDIs are registered in the GUDID, the Global Unique Device Identification Database, for safety purposes, for tracking purposes, so that we can properly interpret results end to end. All right, let's go on to the next slide. So as we all know, labs are complicated. As anybody who's tried to interpret the difference between a spike protein antibody antigen test versus an NTD antigen test, what does this mean? What do I get? What are the units, et cetera, et cetera? Sometimes can be confusing even to clinicians. There's some existing work in LOINC to create consumer names, patient-friendly order and result display names. For patients, we believe future and continued investment in that area is warranted, and recommend that ONC work with other federal partners and SDOs to encourage that development. Next slide. All right. So one of our observations is that the way that the lack of tying the existing standards that are in place to real world practice for ordering and results manifests is that, as an example, we have LOINC, which is a fantastic terminology code set system. And we have some labs, particularly large national labs, that are using LOINC by default. We have often hospital labs or smaller labs that are using legacy proprietary codes. We have, as we mentioned, self-developed tests that may be using proprietary codes, but we don't have a dashboarding telemetry system to figure out how codes are being used in practice to support care, health, and public health. And so we believe it would be useful for ONC in conjunction with other federal stakeholders to create a methodology to track how this is working in practice, not just the theory and mechanisms and standards underlying this, but also, you know, how's it going? Are we transmitting orders using standardized terminology? Are we receiving results in standardized terminology? Are there patterns? As I mentioned, you know, I think there's a belief informed by evidence that we have failure modes for smaller labs, that we have failure modes for self-developed tests. You know, where are there patterns in terms of use of standards and standard terminology and failures to do so? We need data from the field. If we go on to the next slide. All right, I think this is it. I know it's almost too much excitement for everyone to bear. So I think we're sort of there. Right now, the ELR spec, which is mapped to the, as everyone knows, is mapped to the HL7 LRI spec. ELR is electronic lab reportable something. Anyway, it's the spec that's used for reporting reportable labs to public health. LRI is the base spec, the lab results interface. The base spec that's used for results broadly. The ELR spec, because in this country, and as I think we all know from the pandemic, we use labs as the early signal and the mechanism for triggering case reporting. We overload the ELR spec for case reports and case investigation. We believe that as we get broader adoption of ECR, which is the electronic case reporting standard, much of the case reporting infrastructure will be done out of EHRs with direct transmission to public health. And we can keep ELR tightly focused on getting the information on the lab itself back to public health. So in the future, as we have, and there's a very carefully crafted set of recommendations here, as we have adoption of ECR, we believe that we can trim down ELR to be tightly focused on the lab result itself and rely on ECR more for the case investigation. All right. I believe that is it.
You did it, Arian.
Well done, both of you. Excellent. So as everybody is marinating and just, you know, can barely contain themselves in their seats, I'm sure there are questions. I'm sure there are comments. I will start by really thanking both of you and the entire work group. I will say that the precision that it takes to get to this level of granularity matters. It helps in discussions on a number of forums, high tech and beyond across the industry. I hear from fellow CIOs talking about US CDI version 2 and all sorts of things now at a very semantic level. So it's great. People are being able to digest it. So just kudos. That's all I have to say is kudos. Just very well done. So looking for hands raised, curious questions people have, any of those. Let's see who we got. Don't be bashful, high tech. You have questions. And if you're on the phone, you're not on the Zoom call. If you can't raise your hand, please speak up as well.
This is Clem. Can I make a comment?
Go for it, Clem.
Yeah, I put it in the chat. So it's not true that what the term local development test, I think they usually call them laboratory developed tests, comes out the same, LDT. But it's not true that the big labs are not getting standard codes for them. They are. So Mayo and ARUP and Quest and LabCorp do request LOINC codes for a lot of, at least a lot of their laboratory developed tests. Smaller labs, can't speak to, but they probably don't do as much of that development of their own kind of tests. So for the record, it's not quite as bad as you were painting, Arian. That's all.
Yeah, thank you, Clem. And I just want to give Clem tremendous thanks for his contribution to the work group generally and to the task forces that came before and will continue to come after. But Clem always points out to us, you know, broader view. I think we did see, especially in the early days of the pandemic, when a lot of people were struggling to come up with reasonable tests, you know, the need to do this mapping so that we could start to share that data. It was a great example of where this need does continue to exist. But yes, indeed, the big labs are doing a good job doing this mapping. And what we want, what our work group wants, is to recommend that this be done more comprehensively, really across the board, and be baked insofar as possible to standards and certification requirements such that it can be more consistent and reliable.
Yeah, here. But I'd like to add one more thing to think about. So some places aren't sending LOINC codes at all because they haven't defined them. But importantly, they're not always, the mappings are not always careful. So in fact, we've done a study looking at 180 million mapping instances, and about 9% are off. Not always horribly, but still they're off. And there's a paper just came out recently from the Shield Group that suggests the percentage is much higher. So they just aren't paying attention, and I don't know what might be done. But seems to me they don't have problems with billing codes at all. So whether it needs a little more enforcement or a little more pressure, I don't know. But thanks for letting me comment on that.
Thanks, Clem. Yes, it is shocking how good a job we do in getting paid relative to the job that we do in ensuring clinical interpretation and broad use of data for health in healthcare.
Well said, Arian. That's great. Cheryl Turney, you're up next. You may be on mute.
Yep. Thank you so much. I just wanted to, first of all, state what a great job you guys did on your work here. I found it extremely helpful and beneficial. I do have one question or comment, I guess, regarding the standards applying to social determinants of health and also the right to request corrections. You know, these are extremely important standards for all of us, especially with the emphasis to collect and report more information to demonstrate health equity. And I believe also as more and more industry partners are utilizing machine learning, it's going to be really important. But the one thing that I don't think this is something that you could have responded to in this framework, but maybe in the future, is that some of the aspects of the data collection for social determinants of health are not, they're specifically a point in time. So where data often that's collected might be more static, this data might be changing over time depending on how an individual might want to identify themselves, et cetera. So as we move forward with standards relative to those things, is this something that the standards community can really take into consideration, how that data will need to evolve over time? Because I think sometimes people go into this thinking, well, okay, you identify yourself in a certain way, and that's static. But you know, we're finding that's not necessarily the case. So how standards might have to address some of those types of issues that will change over time might need to be different than the way that they were originally anticipated. So I was just wanting to get your interest or your input on that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I appreciate that. And I think we've made recommendations in the past about provenance, source of information, time of information, particularly for patient-generated health data, anything that relates to identity. You know, I think I completely agree with you, needs to include the provenance history so that you can interpret that information in context. And when we did the USCDI deep dive on, for example, gender identity, we recognize that it's an incredibly complex topic and that you need to identify the context and time series associated with each use of information to make sure that you're not making a point in time determination for an individual that you then improperly apply, or a contextual interpretation for an individual that you then apply, you know, as a demographic, as an inbuilt demographic.
And I'll just add to that, Cheryl, thank you for those comments. This is something that our work group did discuss. I think, you know, bringing the clinical perspective, I think these SDOH data elements are much more like vital signs than they are like surgical history, you know, where they are constantly changing, as we all know in our own lives. You know, your one circumstance can shift moment to moment. And whether you're talking about, you know, housing, whether you're talking about identity issues, gender identity, it is also not only changing, but also context specific, where a lot of this individually generated health data different answers could come out in different situations depending on the process by which that data is collected. Hence our specific recommendations on capturing that metadata along with the SDOH data itself.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Wonderful. All right, up next is Dr. Liu from the great state of Texas.
Thank you so much to the co-chairs for these recommendations, and also for the excellent job that you've done with leading the group the past few months. I did want to address the comment about the accuracy of coding of laboratory testing versus the billing. And I think we have to be mindful that in hospitals, there are entire teams of people who have spent their entire lives and careers specializing in CPT coding and making sure that the hospitals stay afloat by making sure that the coding billing is correct. But also the CPT codes are tightly controlled. They are curated and they are simplified because the needs of a coding system for billing is different than a need for a billing for a coding system for use for clinical use and interoperability. So I think we do need to recognize that. And also, I think that at some point, if we are, you know, there's a saying that if you have a problem with one person, that could be, you know, two cases. But if you have a problem with multiple people, or if multiple people start to struggle with the same thing, it might be time to maybe examine the source and see if there's issues with curation and control, or if the system is so complicated that it is hard to use. And so I think that one of the beauty of the SHIELD initiative is we try to shift the coding away from the laboratories and towards the manufacturers who would understand their test menu the best, and to be able to kind of put the onus on those who might be able to accomplish that the most accurately. At the end of the day, I think we all want what's best for patients. And I do think that coding is a weakness in our healthcare system. And I think what might be helpful is to address how best to go forward and ensure that accuracy is what it should be to support interoperability, and what needs to be done to make that happen, rather than just saying that people are not paying attention. Thank you.
Very well said. And again, that my humor aside, that is absolutely the recommendations that we're making. And Dr. Liu has been amazing at contributing his expertise. Hans as well, just all of the work group members really did a deep dive here and made sure that we crafted very well thought through recommendations that take, as Dr. Liu suggests, a systems-based approach to this very complicated problem.
Great feedback. Excellent job. Okie doke. Any other questions, discussions, curiosity?
Well, I just want to remind the group that there is a 26-page document that goes through these recommendations in detail, many of them with the sub-bullets, if you will, that Arian and I tried to touch on in our presentation. But we really, this is what we will be voting on, is the formal recommendations document. Just to remind you how this works, we, as the HITAC, will consider whether we want to approve the recommendations as they are or with modifications. They are then forwarded to the national coordinator for their review and any changes that may be necessary. And then once they are approved there, they become really part of the ONC legacy, if you will. So that's what we did with our first task recommendations around the USCDI version 2 or version 3, and now we have this before us today.
That's right. Thank you, Dr. Lane. Appreciate you reading my monologue. That's excellent. No, that's excellent. I appreciate you taking care of that. You're exactly right. So as a HITAC team, though, I just want to make sure before we get to a call for vote, I just want to make sure any questions, any comments, it is a lengthy document, some phenomenal recommendations in there that are desperately needed across the industry. Obviously more to do. You know, this is not going to end after this. It keeps going, which is great. But I just want to make sure we hear from all of you or anybody that has questions top of mind. I just want to give it one more moment here for hands raised, comments, questions, anything. Okay, we do have a hand raised. Dr. Lin's hand raised his hand.
Sorry, just more context again, just to remind everyone that this is an annual process that we are involved in, that this work group or the work will go on an annual basis. So whether we're talking about our task one with USCDI comments, our task two with the ISA comments and recommendations, this is iterative, and you'll all have a chance to provide more input next year.
That's exactly right. And there's always a public comment here at the end of the HITAC. So for any of the attendees with that have curious questions, that's your time to ask questions during that period. But for right now, for the HITAC members, one more call for any other questions before we go to a vote. Just want to make sure. Okay. Don't see any hands raised or comments. So I think I will ask for a motion to proceed to a vote. May I have a motion, please?
So moved, is Hans.
Hans says, all right. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the ISA recommendations for this giant, wonderful, well laid out document and discussion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, signify by saying nay. Any abstentions? Okie doke. Congratulations. Well done to this task force and these recommendations. They now will be transmitted on to Dr. Trivathi. All right. Well done. Yay. Congrats. Congrats. Well done. Well done, team. All right. So Denise, if you are in agreement with me, maybe it's now time to ask if we can go to public comment.
I think that's where we're at.
Let's do it.
Mike's ready.
Mike, go for it.
All right. I am ready. So we are now going to open up our HITAC meeting for public comments. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be dialed in on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So we do have someone with their hand raised. Charles Gabriel, you can go ahead for 3 minutes.
I have a general question, if that's okay. My general question is, how do we bring a new standards to be discussed, like namely maternity, for example? I know I'm working with a couple of experts on maternity. Is that the right forum to bring such topic or domain?
I'll let our co-chairs respond to that.
So I think what you're asking about is some new or changes to the data classes and elements that are included in the US CDI. Is that true? Data specific to maternity?
Correct. I would say not changes, but add to it or amend or expand.
Right. Yes.
Yep.
So I'll pull up the link here. You can go to the US CDI page on the website, and from there you can get into you can register and provide public comment directly on the data elements and classes that are included or not included in US CDI.
Got you. Thank you so much.
And there's the link in the chat.
There's a link. Yep. Perfect. Thank you, Dr. Lane. Always quick in the links. Excellent.
Thank you, Charles. Just want to remind everybody, while we see if there are any other public comments, that our next HITECH meeting will be held on August 17th. And if you're ever looking for any HITECH materials, either past or present, they can be found on the HITECH calendar on healthit.gov. So I'm not seeing any more hands raised, Aaron Denise, so I will turn it back to you.
Sure. Denise, you want to go first?
All right, sure. So thank you, Seth and Stephen and Arian today for your presentations and for the work group for the great work. You all did a yeoman's job getting all of those recommendations pulled together. I want to wish everybody a nice time off with us being off this next month. However, I do know our new task force is going to be busy. So I thank everyone who has volunteered for that task force and for the work you'll be doing. And we'll be looking forward to what you have to recommend to the committee. So with that, I wish you a good next month, or almost 2 months, actually.
And I will also say the annual report work group is also starting to meet and get that going too. So there's a lot of activity going on, even though we as a HITECH are not meeting next month. So definitely enjoy that time off. I also want to just do a plug and just remind everybody the October deadline for the full EHI definition, electronic health information definition, is coming relatively very fast. Make sure you're doing your due diligence and ensuring that every data element, and again, it's a reminder, not everything is in your electronic medical record. So every data element is accessible as per that EHI definition. So just a friendly plug. And Denise and I are doing listening sessions and roadshows all the next couple of weeks. If you're curious, just Google us. And you'll hear how we're handling it at our institutions and what we're doing. So anyways, with that, have a great, great time off. We'll talk soon, and take care of yourself.
All right.